United States of Horror
may contain some graphic
or explicit content.
Listener discretion is advised.
Ma.
Maha.
Maha. That's loud, K.A. Whoa.
Whoa.
Wow. Molly.
No, copyright. Sorry. Disney, don't sue me, Disney. Hello, everyone. Hey. Welcome back.
What's up? Sorry we failed you and did not get an episode done in time, but...
Sorry we had to get married, I guess.
I'm not really sorry.
I don't. Get over yourselves.
I've kind of waited 8 years.
Or whatever.
Or whatever.
So... You want to know why we said Ma earlier, guys?
Because...
We named our file folder Ma. Because we might...
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Massachusetts.
Okay, I feel like we're a little rusty.
I'm not rusty. I'm going right in.
Yeah, I can tell. There's no easing into it. You're just like...
I'm ready to mess things up.
Oh, great.
I'm ready to go balls to the wall. Miss Darnick.
Ball to the wall. Ding, ding.
Ding, 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 ding. Where's my banjo at? Okay, guys.
I'm so sorry.
Welcome back, everyone. As you know, we are going to Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. I hope everyone had a happy Thanksgiving with family.
Yes. Hopefully everyone's being safe.
Hopefully it was a COVID-free holiday for you.
And I hope everyone has a good upcoming Christmas.
I mean, I'm sure we'll talk to them before that.
I'm pretty sure too, but you never know. You never know. I want people to have an awesome holiday season.
I know. We really don't have that many states left.
Yeah, like, only a couple more.
Like maybe three or something like that.
Yeah, and then we have our, you know, special one or, you know, our campfire one. And then who knows, maybe a season ending or whatever we do. We'll talk about it.
We have some plans.
We have plans? Oh, no.
Well, I have plans.
Thank you. And I'm just following along.
Yeah.
So, Kaylee, would you want to go first today? Or do you want me to go first? I feel like you always have good long stories, and I'm just
We
like,
never
man.
Even introduced ourselves.
Are you sure? No, we did not. And I don't know if you're looking at me weird or you're about to sneeze.
I almost peed myself.
Yeah, she just sneezed, guys. Sorry, we had to cut that part out because it was really loud. But we gave it a good second, that way she can, recuperate.
Sorry.
Sorry, I sneezed on you, Jeff.
Anyway, what were you saying about me?
You have good long stories and well detailed, and I'm just like, meh.
Meh.
So you want to get that meh out of the way, or do you want the good stuff?
I don't even know. I don't even remember who went last or who went first last time.
I think you should go first.
Okay. I can do that.
Yes.
I
gotta listen.
A fun one?
You have fun?
It's never fun.
F is for friends who do stuff together.
U is for ukulele.
U is for uranium bombs.
Anyway.
M is for mass murder. S is for serial killers.
Serial killers.
Down here in the deep city.
Oof.
I don't know.
Anyway. So, we're going to be in Boston today.
Boston? Well, I love Boston. Boston, Massachusetts.
You know, I really should have expected it, but for some reason I'm still just... taken aback by that terrible Boston accent.
Oh, I'm from Boston. Oh, God. You want to fight? I'm Irish. I'm going to fight with you. I'm going to get drunk and fight. Boston. Boston Celtics. The Boston Irish.
Are you done?
Boston.
Boston!
I love Boston, the band.
Is there a band named Boston?
Really, Kaylee?
I don't know.
Okay, guys. Everyone knows who Boston is. Go look them up.
Do they?
Yeah, you should know.
If they have to look them up, then they wouldn't know.
You'll recognize them once you start hearing them.
Probably.
But okay, anyway, guys, do that on your spare time. Listen to our episode first. Sorry, Kaylee. Boston.
So I'm going to be giving you a brief overview, or we're going to be speaking about the Boston Strangler.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Kinky? No, not kinky.
Not so much in this situation.
Bad.
It wasn't consensual, so...
Oh, okay, so bad.
That's never kinky.
Not a good
strangler. That's just bad.
Bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. That kind of threw me off. Sorry. Took me off guard. So the Boston Strangler is the name given to the murderer of 13 women in Boston, Massachusetts area during the early 1960s. So the golden era, so to speak, for serial killers. It's between like the 60s and 70s, yeah. Essentially. So those two decades, yeah, held a lot of like serial murder. I guess it was just easier to get away with stuff.
Especially back then.
Yeah. So, the crimes were initially attributed to Albert DeSalvo, based off of his confession, details revealed in court during a separate case, and DNA evidence linking him to the last victim. So, since the conviction, but prior to DNA evidence, various parties investigating the crime suggested that the murders, sometimes referred to as the Silk Stocking Murders, were committed by more than one person. So there's kind of a little bit of conspiracy surrounding how many people were actually involved.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, I mean, we'll get into it, but... Really?
Could I be a murderer? No, I wasn't born then.
Can you time travel?
Maybe.
We're going to have to talk about that at some point.
Bonus episode, I'm a time-traveling wizard.
You're a wizard, Jeffrey.
I'm a hairy wizard.
No comment. So initially... Oh, wait. Yeah. Initially, the crimes were assumed to be the work of one unknown person dubbed the Mad Strangler of Boston. Or the Boston Strangler. The July 8th, 1962 edition of the Sunday Herald declared a mad strangler is loose in Boston. In one article titled, Mad Strangler Kills Four Women in Boston, the killer was also known as the Phantom Fiend or Phantom Strangler due to his ability to get women to allow him into their apartments. So, right.
So he has like multiple nicknames. That's really awesome. And also the Strangler, like the Mad Strangler.
I just have like a thing for monikers, and he has some really good ones.
I guess so. I'm the Sad Strangler. Okay.
Oh,
stop. Please stop before I cut and strangle this joke into nothingness. Okay.
That was bad.
That was bad.
It wasn't even just like...
Almost as bad as this murderer.
You killed it, but not in a good way.
Not in a good way. I don't think you killed it in a good way either, Kaylee.
No, he did not.
Okay, Kaylee. Sorry. Keep going. Your monikers. Whiskeys.
So, yeah, he was able to get these women to allow him into their apartment. So there's a bit of manipulation there, and you've seen that. We've seen that a couple times. Mm-hmm. Just with these serial killers who come off as very charming and manipulative, and they're able to put this image out of themselves as like innocent. Listen, or
normal down to earth guy just wants to drink, hang out, talk. Jeffrey Dahmer, and you know, those kind of people. They're really
more like Ted Bundy.
Or Ted Bundy.
He came off very like harmless, yeah. But
you know. Just be my friend or else I'll eat you or strangle you. What do you choose? How about just a drink, buddy? I want to go home and cry in peace.
Like, I don't care. Just do whatever you're going to do.
Can I go home and get strangled by you? And the guy's like, wait, what? The murderer's like, this is not how it's supposed to work. I'm not interested anymore.
I just want you to not want it. You know what I mean? Like, you just want it too bad. Anyway, okay. So in 1963, two investigative reporters for the Record American, Gene Cole and Loretta McLaughlin, wrote a four-part series about the killer, dubbing him the Boston Strangler. So that's when he got his one true moniker. The one moniker to rule them all.
One true nickname.
By the time that DeSalvo's confession was aired in open court, the name Boston Strangler had become part of a crime lore. Between June 14th of 1962 and January 4th of 1964, 13 single women between the ages of 19 and 85 were murdered in the Boston area. So a pretty wide range as far as age goes. He didn't mind those silver foxes. I'm so sorry.
I'm okay with that. Choke. Everyone needs love, Kaylee. Everyone needs to be choked.
Oh, I'm just going to continue.
The young, the old. You know, the ones without arms and legs. You know, all of them.
They deserve to be asphyxiated.
They can't choke themselves.
I mean, they could.
I mean, I guess so. Okay.
So most were, this is horrible. I can't even, like, I have to follow up all that banter with something really sad.
Really serious? Okay, guys, seriously, though. That's really sad.
Man. Okay. This isn't funny. Most were sexually assaulted and strangled in their apartments. Police believe that one man was the perpetrator. With no sign of forced entry into their homes, the women were assumed to have let their assailant in, either because they knew him or because they believed him to be an apartment maintenance man, delivery man, or other service man. And back then, I don't want to say it was more common, but it wasn't as weird for people to be coming to your door. You know, like nowadays, if someone knocks on the door, it's like, who is it?
Yeah. Well, because you had your phone on you 24/7. Yeah. Back then, like, oh, my mother-in-law forgot to call me at the telephone at her house.
Or people did just show up randomly. People didn't always even call ahead to let them know. Yeah. They would just show up.
You stop by your friend's house and say, hey, I'm staying the night, dude. You're going to like it. Okay, well, what do you want to eat? I already ate. Don't worry about it. Just eat all their food. Yeah, that's just how it used to be back then, especially later into the 90s.
People would just drop in. And the service people, there was I don't want to say there was more trust or things were more innocent, but it was just a different era.
Yeah, especially for the older folks, because they used to have like their milk delivered to them and stuff.
All kinds of things.
All kinds of things. So that's how they used to see people and like,
talk to people. I mean, the Avon lady, like the list goes on and on. There's door-to-door salespeople. So
yeah,
it wasn't as uncommon. The attacks continued despite extensive media publicity after the first few murders, which presumably should have discouraged women from admitting strangers into their homes. In my opinion, he had to have been super charming. Like, there's nothing else that explains it. Yeah, maybe he was convincing also, but
he must have been looking good for those.
Looking good, boxes. Talking good, something.
If The Rock came up to me and started talking to me like that, and he was a Boston Strangler, I would let him in.
Would you let The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, in?
Choke me? Yeah, I'll call him Daddy, too. Sorry, I'm not saying he is the Strangler. I'm just saying, if he is, it's okay. Please don't get mad at me, Rock.
I don't think the age demographic, like, I don't think that he's within the...
He's a new age. Except I like it. I'm willing for him.
Unless he's a time traveler, too. It doesn't make sense.
Me, him, or...
But, he's new. Jeff, what are you talking about? What are you saying?
Jeff and The Rock's awesome adventure. Like Bill and Ted's awesome adventure. But except it's me and him. That way it's way more awkward of a movie.
Is anybody else following this?
Good, don't. Please don't follow us anymore. I'm joking. Please follow us. Like and subscribe and share and... Oh, sorry, Kayla, you're talking.
I'm asking them if they understand you. Because I'm failing to.
Well, everyone believes that certain people are like the Zodiac Killer and all these other people are... I'm like,
you know what? It's fine.
What if The Rock is secretly like a strangler, okay? That's all I'm saying.
I don't...
And you know, whenever he's choking them, you're welcome. I don't know. Okay.
What can I say except we're moving on.
Okay.
Many residents purchased tear gas and new locks and deadbolts for their doors. Some women even moved out of the area. The murders occurred in several cities, including Boston, complicating jurisdictional oversight for prosecution of the crimes. And back then, we've seen this with the Golden State Killer. Yeah. He did... his horrible, awful things in multiple jurisdictions, and there wasn't a lot of communication. And so this caused a lot of information to be kind of like not lost, but lost. Yeah, and a lot of those about,
swept aside.
A lot of those connections weren't made until way after the fact, whenever they started to piece everything together and realize
Ew. They all sat in the same room. They're like, oh, you have that too? We too. And the killer was what do you know?
What do you know?
It's like science and, you know, actual study. And
GSK, I keep bringing him up because he's like the ultimate, in my opinion, he's one of the worst, because there's no way that we will ever know the extent of all that he has done.
Yeah.
And he started at such a young age, even just doing like the petty crimes and like the Peeping Tom and like all that other stuff. Anyway, so he is a good reference point because he did it all.
He's West Side. This guy's East Side.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Tupac and Biggie.
Oh, God. Okay.
I just compare one a mass murderer to the, don't shoot me, guys. Don't hate me.
Okay, so Massachusetts Attorney General Edward W. Brooke helped to coordinate the various police forces. He permitted parapsychologist Peter Hurkos to use his alleged extrasensory perception to analyze the case, for which Hurkos claimed that a single person was responsible. This decision was controversial. Hurkos provided a minutely detailed description of the wrong person, and the press ridiculed Brooke. The police were not convinced at all that the murders were the action of one person, although much of the public believed so. The apparent connections between the majority of the victims and hospitals were widely discussed. So, it's kind of up in the air. Still.
Interesting.
Yeah. It is really
interesting. Told you, it's a rock in me.
But we're going to go through the victims. I'm going to just give you a real brief explanation on how they were murdered. And then we can kind of connect the dots.
Connect out of the box?
Sure. So, this is kind of funny. Not funny, but...
Wow, Kaylee. What's funny?
Okay, but her name is Anna Elsa.
Anna Elsa?
Yeah.
So, she did not let it go. Oh, no, she let it go, all right.
He didn't let go.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys.
She is kind of frozen in time.
Kaylee! not funny. Aww. Funny.
Talk about funny. Traversing into the unknown.
Stop. Aww.
Okay. I'll laugh it alone.
What does that even mean?
I'll leave it alone. I'll laugh it alone. Okay.
Come down, Samantha.
All right, Sven.
Already. You need Sven it alone.
Oh, God. Okay. All right, I'm done for real. So Anna Elsa Slessers. You know what? Anna Elsa, 56, she was sexually... I'm so sorry. Aww. I made all those jokes.
You're the worst, Kaylee.
She was sexually assaulted with I have to say this without a smile. It's not funny. I'm just like...
Is your millennial brain thinking of Frozen characters while this is happening to them?
I know. I'm sorry. She was sexually assaulted with an unknown object and strangled with the belt of her bathrobe. She was found on June 14th of 1962 in her third floor apartment at 77 Gainsborough Street, Fenway, Boston. So that was the first victim that they attributed to the Boston Strangler.
Which would be really interesting, because why her?
And to me, like, from... all of the other cases that we've analyzed and all the other stories that we've covered, to me, that doesn't seem like someone's first kill. Well, to go in and boldly kill them in their own apartment, like, that's just, like, a really bold move. I feel like they would have had to work their way up to it. Like, maybe there was a slew of sexual assaults that he never was tied to, or maybe he got away with, because that's just like a huge escalation to go from not doing anything to like, bam, strangled her to death.
Well, if I heard a podcast where they thought it was someone like his mom, and that's why he actually knew her, she actually knew this guy, and that's why she was targeted first.
Oh, maybe.
And then that's why he kept doing it, to recreate the mom moment, like a Norman, like a psycho movie.
Like, maybe it initially was like...
got out of hand.
A sexual relationship that got out of hand, yeah. Escalated. Got it.
And that's why it kept getting worse, and he had to change his thing. But then again, who knows? Like you
who
said.
Knows? Yeah.
Keep going, Kaylee. I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay, so victim number two is Mary Mullen. She was 85. She died from a heart attack and found on June 28th, 1962 in her apartment. In his confession, DeSalvo said she collapsed as he grabbed her.
That's so sad.
Isn't that so sad?
Oh.
I know, my heart.
No, her heart. Sorry, that's not funny.
Should have gotten Anna Elsa because love can cure a frozen heart.
I don't think both of them could have stopped him. He has two hands, Kaylee.
Slow hands. Anyway, I'm sorry.
We're so bad. Okay, we need to be more serious.
With humor.
We need to be more serious.
So Nina Frances Nichols, 68, sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon. She was sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon stockings found on June 30th of 1962 in her home. Helen Elizabeth Blake, 65, sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon stockings also, found on June 30th in 1962 in her home. So they were found on the same day. I don't know if that means that they were murdered on the same day. Probably not.
Well,
I've
heard from that podcast there was a copycat guy, and that's why... I forgot what podcast it was, but it was... I think it was Time Suck or something like that. Or they talked about how they could have been 2 to 3 people. Yeah. Totally different people.
Operating at the same time.
At the same time.
Yeah. It could have been. I mean, the MO isn't, like, super specific.
Yeah.
I feel like strangulation kind of...
would fit it in general anyway.
In a sexual assault anyway. So. Okay. And then Ida Otis Erga... she was 75. These are all older women, too.
That's
so,
what I'm saying. It's like a mom, kind of grandma kind of thing.
Yeah. So there was something psychologically there. I have to wonder how old... I mean, if it is this guy, we'll obviously find out. But I have to wonder, like... I just wish we knew more. I feel like there was not enough about everything. Anyway. So she was sexually assaulted and strangled, found on August 19th of 1962 in her apartment at 7 Grove Street, Bacon Hill, Boston. So...
bacon?
Yeah.
Food?
I just had this thought, maybe it's my immature little brain.
Okay, Kaylee.
But what if he was like a gigolo? I was going to say juggalo. Gigolo. Like a male prostitute.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like,
and
like
it's
that?
These older women who are lonely.
And they call him, yeah.
And he, I don't know.
Like, imagine Craigslist.
He gets his rocks off by murdering them and assaulting them.
Well, yeah. That would make just a lot of sense.
So, Miss Helen Blake, did we talk about her?
I don't know.
Helen Elizabeth Blake, 65. She was sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon stockings, found on June 30th, 1962. We did talk about her.
Okay.
And then Ida, 75, sexually assaulted and strangled, found on August. Yeah, we talked about her too, because she's
double
bacon.
One.
And then Jane Buckley Sullivan, 67, sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon stockings, found on August 21st of 1962. Sophia Clark, 20, so younger, sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon stockings. So that specific detail is the same.
Yeah, it's credible.
However, back then, women wore nylons, like, with every outfit.
Yeah.
So, it's hard to say. She was found on December 5th in her apartment. Patricia Jane Bullock Bissett, 23. So it seems like they're getting younger, too.
Slowly but surely.
Oh, no. It jumps around. I lied. But they start to get younger in the middle.
Yeah.
So Patricia was strangled with her nylon stockings, and she was found on December 31st, 1962, in her home. Mary Ann Brown, she was 69. She was raped, strangled, beaten, and stabbed. So a little bit of escalation there.
Yeah.
And then Beverly Sammons, she was 25, stabbed to death, found on May 6th of 1963 in her home as well. And then Marie Evelyn Corbin, Evelina Corbin, 58, was raped and strangled with her nylon stockings, found on September 8th of 1963.
Oh, was she stabbed?
She was not stabbed. So there is that little, those few that are attributed that were stabbed, which could just be an escalation. Maybe there was more going on in his life at the time. Or that could have been a copycat. Or it could have been a copycat.
Yeah.
Someone who didn't have the strength to strangle them
or didn't have the will to do it.
Yeah, and because had to...
And I, from what I've heard, it's different from when you shoot them, someone, when you stab someone, and when you choke them.
Okay.
Or suffocate.
Yes. Strangulation is probably, in my opinion, the worst.
Yes.
Because you are literally... It's not quick.
You're watching the life go out of their eyes when you do it sometimes.
And you have to maintain that pressure. It's evil.
It is.
It's like the supreme evil. Stabbing is very violent.
It could be.
And that seems more personal.
More personal and or more quick judge. Like, you just get angry and stab.
Emotional.
And more emotional. That's what I meant. Yeah. Thank you. So that's why a lot of people thought it could have been a copycat right there. Because that was his original MO.
Yeah.
So I was like, I thought that was interesting.
Very interesting. After Marie, it was Joanne Marie Graff. She was 22. She was strangled with her nylon stockings, found on November 23rd of 1963 in her apartment as well. Mary Ann Sullivan, 19, so she was the youngest. She was sexually assaulted and strangled with her nylon stockings, found on January 4th of 1964 in her apartment. And she was also the last known victim. The murders of Margaret Davis, 60, of Roxbury, and Cheryl Laird, 14, of Lawrence, were originally attributed to the Boston Strangler, but were later found to be unrelated cases.
Yeah.
So, there's a little bit of inconsistency in there. And I think
the younger ones? Or the 14-year-old? Young lady.
Oh, maybe not.
From what I heard in the few podcasts I listened to about it, they think he was like a 40-something-year-old who had trouble with his mom. And then he eventually, after she passed away, he went crazy. And he found younger pictures of his mom. And that's why he started going younger.
Oh, maybe.
So that's why they thought he just wanted that mother connection.
That's a good theory, for sure.
So I was like, oh. Yeah. What do you know? I sound smart for once. I actually listen to some cool stuff once in a while.
Thank you. You've added a lot to this. I appreciate that because it was kind of like bare bones information.
Yeah. And somehow I knew. How do I know a lot about the Boston map? I told you. I'm a Boston Strangler, Kaylee.
Oh, God.
I love them old ladies with the foxy hair. You can call me Foxy. Yeah. Go home, watch some Golden Girls or something.
Okay, we're moving on from
Betty
that.
White, Betty White gets me wet.
Jeffrey!
Sorry. I can't say that. Betty White, hey, you can't make fun of her. She's amazing.
I'm not making fun of Betty White. I'm making fun of you.
Chuck Norris and her went to war once. That's how the world was created. Okay.
On October 27th of 1964, a stranger entered a young woman's home posing as a detective. He tied the victim to her bed, sexually assaulted her, and suddenly left, saying, "I'm sorry," as he went. The woman's description of her attacker led police to identify the assailant as DeSalvo. When his photo was published, many women identified him as the man who had assaulted them. So again, kind of what I was saying is like maybe there was a slew of sexual assaults that never got
reported or told or anything.
Yeah. Earlier on October 27th, DeSalvo had passed as a motorist with car trouble and attempted to enter a home in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. The homeowner, future Brockton Police Chief Richard Sprouls, became suspicious and eventually fired a shotgun at DeSalvo. DeSalvo was not initially suspected of being involved in the strangling murders. After he was charged with rape, he gave a detailed detailed confession of his activities as the Boston Strangler. He initially confessed to fellow inmate George Nassar. Nassar reported the confession to his attorney, F. Lee Bailey, who also took on the defense of DeSalvo. The police were impressed with the accuracy of DeSalvo's description of the crime scenes. However, there were some inconsistencies, but DeSalvo was able to cite details that had not that had been withheld from the public. So that's really intriguing.
Well, that podcast, they said he had a partner mm-hmm. and a copycat, and they both were in the same place, same time. Like you said, a juggalo.
A juggalo.
Juggalo, juggalos. Yep. Lord. You know, in the same time,
I mean, posse up in here. There could be juggalo, juggalos. I'm not judging anybody.
Yeah, and that would take turns. That's why
some of it was weird. No judgment, juggalo, juggalos. You do you, boo-boo.
We do us, you do you. Whoop, whoop.
So no physical evidence substantiated his confession. Because of that, he was tried on charges for earlier unrelated crimes of robbery and sexual offenses, in which he is known as the Green Man and the Measuring Man, respectively. Bailey brought up DeSalvo's confession to the murders as part of his client's history at the trial in order to assist in gaining a not guilty by reason of insanity verdict to the sexual offenses, but it was ruled as inadmissible by the judge. So he attempted to... He thought maybe it was going to get him off on the charges that he was facing. So yeah. There's that question of, okay, was he just trying to, like...
get out of it? Or was he actually kind of suffering from something? Which, you know, like that one lady said, I'm sorry. He said, I'm sorry too.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
It is really weird.
So...
like, why...
Most serial killers, most people don't usually say sorry.
I don't know. It's just weird. It's out of character for sure.
Yeah.
So DeSalvo was sentenced to life in prison in 1967, and in February of that year, he escaped with two fellow inmates from Bridgewater State Hospital, triggering a full-scale manhunt. A note was found on his bunk addressed to the superintendent. In it, DeSalvo stated that he had escaped to focus attention on the conditions in the hospital and his own situation. He's doing it for the betterment of everyone. And himself.
How dare he?
So dumb.
At least he brought two people with him.
True. I mean, he could have been selfish and just escaped himself. But
now he has a clan. Now he has a posse.
Oh, he's working in a group of three.
Illuminati confirmed.
Immediately after his... escape, DeSalvo disguised himself as U.S. Navy Petty Officer 3rd Class, but the next day he gave himself up. Hmm. He couldn't take the pressure. That's a lot of stress. And then he probably realized, oh man, I was getting 3 square meals a day.
So you're saying
they were giving me drugs. I need to go back to that place.
So he choked.
I said, well, that's not funny. following the escape, he was transferred to maximum security Walpole State Prison. So that kind of backfired because he went from
an okay place.
Honestly, I don't know. It's so hard to tell because sometimes the prisons are in better shape than the hospitals.
Yeah, I guess it all. Yeah. It depends on where you live too, and what
it really depends. Yeah. I can't say for sure, but there are some instances. And
also, if you're maximum security, or if you're just local, or you know. All that stuff.
Well, based off of some of the pictures of people, like, stacked on top of each other, it's, like, hard to tell.
And there's some who had, like, laptops and, like, free Wi-Fi in their cells.
Well,
like,
not in the freaking 70s, Jeffrey. Well,
but... obviously, but...
6 years after the transfer, he was found stabbed to death in the prison infirmary. His killer or killers were never identified. So, very interesting.
Conspiracy. Yeah. Told you it was a rock. He's like, you are gonna rat on me, buddy.
Yeah. So hey. Prior
and he got his Maui hook.
I'm just gonna continue. Prior to DNA confirmation in 2013, doubts existed as to whether DeSalvo was the Boston Strangler. At the time when he confessed, people who knew him personally did not believe he was capable of such vicious crimes, which honestly that doesn't hold any water at all, because people said the same thing about BTK.
Yeah.
He was a family man, a church deacon, like he...
Or like Ted Bundy for a little bit.
Yeah,
like
he was it's a true.
Politician who worked for suicide help.
What's her name? Anne Wright. Anne Rule.
Anne Rule.
Anne Rule.
Yeah.
She's a true crime author, and she was good friends with him. They worked at the Suicide Prevention Hotline Center together, and she had she would have swore up and down that it was not him. But
yeah, there's some killers you're like, oh, that's not bad at all, and then some are like, oh,
yeah. So, creating doubt of a serial killer who characteristically has a certain type of victim and method of murder. The women killed by the strangler were from a variety of age and ethnic groups, and there were different MOs. So, essentially, it was hard to identify what exactly the MO was, which is what we talked about. There's nothing super distinct besides the nylons, but
yeah,
it's I don't know. How much does that really like matter? Does it or does it not?
Well, I guess it depends.
It's really hard to say. So in 1968, Dr.
Ames Roby.
Sure. Medical director of Bridgewater State Hospital insisted that DeSalvo was not the Boston Strangler. He said the prisoner was a very clever, very smooth, compulsive confessor who desperately needs to be recognized. Robbie's opinion was shared by Middlesex direct attorney John J. Drowney, Bridgewater Superintendent Charles Gaugen, and George W. Harrison, a former fellow inmate of DeSalvo. So multiple people kind of...
said it's not him. He was just, you know, taking it to get the credit. And he was pretty much led by the police.
Mm-hmm. Harrison claimed to have overheard another convict coaching DeSalvo about details of the strangling murders. So he could have even been manipulated by someone who actually partook in the murders or something like that.
Yeah.
And convinced them to confess. Or who knows? Who knows? DeSalvo's attorney, Bailey, believed that his client was the killer and described the case in The Defense Never Rests, 1995. There are a few different movies and books out. Susan Kelly, author of the book The Boston Stranglers, 1986, drew from the files of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Strangler Bureau. She argues that the murders were the work of several killers rather than a single individual. So, what?
Maybe that's the book I read, too, with that podcast.
Potentially.
That's
probably really the book that they read.
That sounds really familiar.
Former FBI profiler Robert Ressler, he's written a lot of books that are really interesting. So if you ever want to listen or read to any true crime books, Robert Ressler is the guy to look for. So he said, you're putting together so many different patterns regarding the Boston Strangler's murders, and it's inconceivable behaviorally that all these could fit one individual. I don't think that it's out of the question, but it's just improbable.
Yeah. Well, that's why I liked that one podcast, that one idea where it was like he was thinking about his mother.
Yeah.
And like how she would treat him in certain ways. And I like that idea a lot because he actually would go for different types of women. She would dress up different one day and then do this. And like that nylon, that like just remember, I don't know, it's weird. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, you always remember one or two things about your mom.
Yeah.
Or what she did for you. Maybe that was just his obsession with her was nylon.
Maybe. But you have to think, too, about, like, the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez. He didn't have any sort of pattern.
He was just evil.
He would attack anybody and everybody. Yeah. So.
Maybe he just was one of those guys.
Yeah.
It is Boston.
Where did Richard Ramirez move from?
What?
Oh, my God. I don't know.
He's like,
we'll talk about him for sure. He's like, oof.
What, he's just a nice doctor.
He's one of...
He just stocks of water bottles.
I'm so done with you.
Okay.
Another big name, Johnny Douglas. He's also John E. Douglas. I kind of like ran all of that together. He's a really good... He's another really good author. He is a former FBI special agent, and he was one of the first criminal profilers. He doubted that DeSalvo was the Boston Strangler. So two big...
FBI guys. Yeah,
essentially. So in his book, The Case That Haunts Us, he identified DeSalvo as a power assurance motivated rapist. So he said that such a rapist is unlikely to kill in the manner of crimes attributed to the Boston Strangler. A power assurance motivated rapist would, however, be prone to taking credit for the crimes. So,
I mean, that would make sense.
Yeah. In 2000, attorney and former print journalist Elaine Sharp took the cause of the DeSalvo family and that of the family of Mary Sullivan. Sullivan was publicized as being the final victim in 1964, although other strangling murders occurred after that date. Sharp assisted the families in their media campaign to clear DeSalvo's name. She helped organize and arrange the exhumation of Mary Sullivan and Albert H. DeSalvo. She filed various lawsuits in attempt to obtain information and trace evidence, so DNA, from the government, and worked with various producers to create documentaries to explain the facts to the public. Sharp noted various inconsistencies between DeSalvo's confessions and the crime scene information which she obtained. So, for example, she observed that contrary to DeSalvo's confessions to Sullivan's murder, the woman was found to have no semen in her vagina, and she was not strangled manually, but by ligature. Forensic pathologist Michael Baden noted that DeSalvo got the time of death wrong. So, I mean, nobody's perfect, though,
at the same
time. Yeah. This was a common inconsistency also pointed out by Susan Kelly in several of the murders. She continues to work on the case for the DeSalvo family. So,
well, that would make sense, because if there's like, oh, we've got the killer, he's dead, and there's still strangling happening,
yeah,
then it's kind of not fixed.
Mm-hmm.
There's something bigger going on, guys.
Yeah.
And from what I've heard on that podcast, there was at least five other ones within the year he was imprisoned.
Yeah.
So I think there's more than that.
Well, there was some DNA evidence. So on July 11th of 2013, the Boston Police Department released information stating that they had found DNA evidence which linked DeSalvo to the murder of Mary Sullivan. DNA found at the scene was a near certain match to Y-DNA taken from nephew of DeSalvo. Y-DNA's passed through the direct male lines and little change and can be used to link males with common paternal line
essence.
No.
Let me say it.
Paternal line ancestor. Wow, that was hard. So Y-DNA is passed through the direct male lines with little change and can be used to link males with a common paternal line ancestor. I don't know why that was so hard. To determine conclusively that it was DeSalvo's DNA, a court ordered the exhumation of his body in order to test his DNA directly. And on July 19th, your birthday, 2013. Oh, that was our first birthday that we spent together.
Oh, great.
Thanks, Kelly. Suffolk County District Attorney Daniel F. Conley, Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley, and Boston Police Commissioner Edward F. Davis announced that DNA test results prove that DeSalvo was the source of seminal fluid recovered at the scene of Sullivan's 1964 murder. So he was tied to that one conclusively. One,
for sure. Yeah. But they also said that it could also have been a father kind of side, like the paw, like the
or
son, brother.
He could have been the copycat.
He could have been the copycat.
There's so many different things. And I don't understand why they didn't take his DNA and compare it to all the other ones unless they didn't have that DNA evidence to compare it to.
Or maybe it was outside the jurisdiction or the old...
Because she was working with Sullivan's family directly, so they had...
It was like a partnership kind of thing.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what has to happen.
I don't know. But it's really sad, either way, that those crimes will likely never be...
solved.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. And who knows? He could have gone on and done even more crimes and committed even more horrendous rapes and murders.
Yeah, it could still have been going on. It could have been a family. It could have been a cult. We will never know. Told you, me and the Rock, man.
I hate that stuff. I really do. It's like the freaking Zodiac Killer.
I love the Zodiac Killer.
I know, but I hate it because it just drives me insane.
Like, why would you leave notes that make no sense, dude?
I know. Just come out with it.
Just tell me what you want. Why are you being such a woman?
Tell me who you are. A Jeffrey.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't say that. Like, what do you want to eat? Let me make you this, you know, this sign, this coding. What does this say? What do you want?
Oh, Lordy. Okay. Anyway, so that's the Boston Strangler.
Thank you, Kaylee. That was an awesome little story.
Yeah, thank you. It took a little bit longer than I expected, but I am glad.
That's perfect. We're already doing pretty good, and now we can get done with my horrible little story.
I don't think we're going to edit this at all. We're just going to leave it how it is and just put it up.
I'm okay with that. I'd say there's only like two things I was kind of questioning, but...
So sorry if I sound stupid. That's how I sound all the time.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Wait, what?
That's how I sound all the time anyway,
It's just who I am.
Don't judge us. Okay, you can judge a little bit. All right, you ready for mine?
Yes.
Okay. So, I only have one.
Okay.
Because I'm awesome. That way it'll be nice and quick.
Perfect. It's called
the Pukwudgies.
The what?
The Pukwudgies. P-U-K.
Pukwudgies?
P-U-K.
Uh-huh.
W-U.
Uh-huh.
D-G.
Okay.
I-E-S.
Did you guys follow that?
So, the Pukwudgies. The Pukwudgies. I don't know how to say it. So, is a human-like creature found in Delaware and Wampanoag folklore. So, it's a Native American folklore.
Got it.
And old story from Boston and them.
Boston.
So, it's sometimes said to be 2 to 3 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
So, according to legend, the Pukwudgies can appear and disappear at will, lure people to their deaths, use magic, launch poison arrows, and create fire.
Interesting.
I know.
Fire. Fire.
So the Native Americans believe that Pukwudgies were once friendly to humans, but then turned against them and are best left alone.
Hmm.
According to lore, a person who annoyed a Pukwudgie can be subject to nasty tricks by it, or subject to being followed by the Pukwudgie.
Hmm.
So, who would cause trouble for them? They're also known to kidnap people, push them off cliffs, attack their victims with short knives and spears, and to use sand to blind their victims.
That is horrendous.
Isn't that funny?
That's terrifying, but it's kind of funny.
Okay, so how would you describe it?
From the picture?
From the picture I showed you.
It's like a pot belly...
Like me. Okay, so... So
show me the picture again.
I don't have the picture on me right now.
What is it called?
The Pukwudgie.
Pukwudgie.
P-U-K. And now wedgie.
Wudgie. Okay. So they're kind of like gremlins.
Or goblins.
Goblins. They're like, it's like a goblin.
So, you know, so it's like a goblin.
It looks like a hedgehog.
Yes. Imagine... Harry Potter, Dobby, the elf.
With hedgehog body.
Yes. So, speaking of that, you know we talked about Harry Potter earlier in the episode?
Did we?
Yeah.
I don't even remember that.
We said, I'm a wizard, Jeffrey.
Got it. I remember that now.
A Harry Potter reference, actually.
Oh, truly?
Yeah. The Pukwudgies have been identified by J.K. Rowling as magical creatures in the Harry Potter universe.
Oh, okay.
In a description on Pottermore... Rowling describes the creature as follows. The Pukwudgie is also a native to America and a short, gray-faced, large-eared creature distantly related to the European goblin.
Oh.
So, you know, like those goblins in the bank?
Yep.
Just like that, but worse.
That's literally what it looks like, but with...
Porcupine hair. That way they can hide in the forest and stuff. So, the Pukwudgie is a symbol and name of one of the houses in the Livermore School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. So, like Hogwarts, but in America.
Really?
It's like Hufflepuff?
Yeah.
But yeah, one of the creatures. Yeah.
I would definitely be in the Pukwudgie house.
And they cause mischief. And so they're like the, how do I say it? Like the Gryffindors in a way.
Oh, okay.
So they're like the troublemakers and
that's hilarious. Sarcastic. Okay, then I wouldn't be them.
Oh, well, maybe,
I'm Ravenclaw.
So.
What's your guys' house? Just kidding. That's irrelevant.
No, it is irrelevant.
Okay, I kind of want to know, though.
I'm Hufflepuff. Get over yourself.
I'm Ravenclaw. Get over yourself.
I'm a puff. I don't give a puff. Harry Puff. Harry Popper. Harry Popper. Harry Popper.
Alrighty.
Anyway.
Anyway.
That's all I got. Oh, I just thought it was cool. Man,
it's going to be a short little episode. I mean, we made it to like an hour-ish.
Because I actually heard about this.
The Puckwudgies?
Yeah. And I'm like, where have I heard that before? Then I remember hearing an off-brand story about the school and
from Pottermore. Yeah.
I'm like, I knew it was from Harry Potter.
That's so cool.
And she stole it from...
That was a really good story.
Yeah.
I liked that.
You had a good story, Kaylee.
Thank you.
So go ahead and be Puckwudgie the next couple of weeks before Santa comes.
Speaking of Santa.
Santa Claus?
Yeah.
What about Santa?
Well, do you want to know a weird law?
Sure.
I was just excited. It was kind of a segue into it. We can talk more after this.
Well, I was like, okay, come on. I was like, come on. What is it? Like, you want to hear weird law? I'm like, oh, yeah. That's what I was trying to wait for.
So, do not deck your halls. Does your family celebrate Christmas? Well, stop now or you risk a fine. The state declared the holiday illegal in 1659. And just imagine the interest on all those Christmas fines you may owe if they catch you.
I don't think that's true anymore.
Well, no, but it's like still...
I know it's still in the books, technically. It's like how Arizona has like the weird horse laws and weird water laws and stuff.
Yeah, so you're not allowed to celebrate Christmas if you're in Massachusetts. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, they didn't want that at first. Everything changed.
I know. Things change. People change. Life changes.
Revolutionary wars happen and... people go crazy over stuff. Anyway, okay, well, let's not get all into that.
Anyway.
Thank you for the weird law, Kaylee.
Yeah, we really do hope that y'all had good holidays.
All y'all.
All y'alls.
All y'all down there in the hoods and the cities and the urbans and the other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, Kaylee, how can you find us?
Well, I want to talk a little bit.
Oh, you want to talk? Okay, what do you want to talk about?
Okay, so I just want to say that... we're coming up on another Camp Horror Campfire Stories in like 5 episodes or so. I'd really like to get some people's personal stories out there so that we can, you know, share it for the world to hear. And if you have any suggestions for our upcoming new season, just start sending those in now.
Yeah.
Because we are going to be going into full-fledged season number 2. I think we're going to take it in a little bit of a different route. We'll still have a lot of the same
structure, and
but we have some really exciting ideas. I can't even explain to you how excited I am to implement these little,
we'll see how it is. But go ahead and send us what you think. Like, if you know a cool state you live in and you know a cool urban myth that we miss, tell us about it. And then have I want Jeff to try to explain this. And I'll be like, oh, great. That's going to be wonderful.
Because we're going to be looking for somewhere to start, somewhere nice to start at the beginning of season number 2. So
go ahead. If first one is to tell us, we'll go do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on, guys.
We're also doing some exciting stuff on Patreon, so be on the lookout for that. We're going to have something potentially in the future, near future. It's just a matter of working out the details. So we'll be posting soon.
We want to do so much. We just keep running out of time. But, hey, if we get more sponsors, more...
yeah. Show us you're interested. We need to know that you're interested. And if we see you guys sharing and liking and... supporting the show, then we can do more. But for right now, it's kind of where it is, because we can't invest all this time if it's not gonna, you know, come back around. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and we don't mind doing this with you guys.
We have fun. We like talking to you.
Yeah. We want to build a community with you guys.
But we would like to do more, and we can do more if we just see that it's actually wanted.
Yeah. But hey, who knows? If you guys want it, just let us know. Just let us know, guys.
Yeah.
Talk with us.
Speak to us, so please.
How can you find us?
So if you wanted to talk to us, you could email us, and that's unitedstatesofhorror@gmail.com. Or we are most active on Instagram. I'm constantly signed into there, so you can message and I will likely respond. That's at unitedstatesofhorror. Facebook.com/unitedstatesofhorror. TikTok, Twitter is US of Horror. We're not on there, though. Really.
Really. But, yeah, we're mainly on Instagram and Facebook.
And then Patreon, you can message us also. That's patreon.com/TheUnitedStatesOfHorror. And we have a $1 tier, $5 tier, and $10 tier. So super affordable, and you get some bonus content and some exciting stuff on there as well.
And potential merch. Yes. I know we might kind of take time or slow about some things, but you know, we will work with it harder. Yes. Just let us know.
And the offer still stands. We have a presidential tier person. The next person to sign up for a presidential tier gets a free shirt and a free beanie. Or wait, free mask.
Not a free beanie. That's mine.
Not a free beanie.
Free mask and free shirt.
If you're interested in beanies, though, let us know.
Definitely. But if not, just give us a dollar. Give me a dollar. A dollar a day gives me Polar Pop a day.
That just shows that you support what we're doing, and just even seeing that dollar a month support is huge, honestly.
I mean, you can just throw away the change in a jar. You just give it to me. Come on, guys.
All right. We appreciate you guys even just listening. It really means a lot to us, and we hope that you enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
This is Kaylee.
This is Jeff.
And we are the United States of Horror. Bye.
Bye, guys. Puck Wedgie.
Jeff.
I said Puck Wedgie.
Oh, it sounded like you said something else.
Oh, what?
Oh.
Bye.